digital marketer.
Today, Jenna is speaking with David Meerman Scott, author of many best-selling books, including The New Rules of Marketing and PR. David is a renowned speaker and a marketing and sales strategist.
Oh, well, I'm really excited to talk to you. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about before we get into fans, a while ago, you published an amazing book, The New Rules for Marketing and PR. And it's been a little bit since that was published. So I'd like to know now, in 2019, going into 2020, what are the new rules?
The new rules.
Yeah.
In fact, I actually just finished the 7th edition of the New Rules of Marketing and PR, which is kind of remarkable. The first edition came out in 2007, mm-hmm. Which is like 100 years ago in digital dog lives, right? And the 7th edition is coming out in the middle of 2020. And what's interesting is that from the perspective of the strategies, nothing has changed. Mm-hmm. The idea of the new rules of marketing and PR is that in the new world, you can publish content to get noticed. I mean, something a digital marketer has been talking about since the beginning. Whereas the old rules were that you had to buy attention by paying for advertising. The new rules are you can generate attention yourself. But what has changed since 2007 is that the different tools that we have available and the different ways that we have to reach people. When I wrote the first edition, Twitter didn't exist. Facebook was only for students. Instagram wasn't even a thought on anyone's mind yet. And now with the newest edition that is coming out in middle of 2020, I added a brand new chapter on AI and marketing. So it's constantly changing. And that's really what the most interesting thing I think is, and why I need to continue to put out new editions, because there's new ideas, but there's also new stories I want to tell.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I mean, you kind of called it.
I kind of did. You know, I had an unfair head start because I worked for 15 years, basically when I got out of college, for 15 years in the financial information business. I worked for companies like Dow Jones and Reuters, and I was dealing with real-time content before the web. You know, so in the late 1980s, early 1990s, well before the web, I was using real-time news, real-time pricing data. And there was, through services like Dow Jones, Telerate, and Bloomberg, there was actually rudimentary blogging even. So then when the web came around, I was like, this is not new. I get this. I've been doing this for a long time. And I was able to see something that really no one else saw back in 04, 05, 06, and that is that marketing is no longer about buying attention. Marketing is about publishing content. And since I had been in the publishing business for so long, it just seemed second nature. And I did kind of call it, but I was based on the fact that I had this wonderful background in digital information before practically anyone else on the planet had that.
And it's just super educated. Can't call it a guess. I don't know what you'd call it.
The way I describe this weird ability I have is that I'm able to see patterns in the universe before others people see patterns in the universe. I've had that happen to me a couple of times. And every time I see a big significant pattern where I'm like, oh my gosh, the world is changing. No one else is seeing this but me. I have to get it. I have to get it out there in the form of a book.
So, and I'm guessing that's where Fanocracy kind of comes into play.
It does. My newest book is called Fanocracy, Turning Customers into Fans and Fans into Customers. And yeah, that's the same idea. And here's what happened around that. 5 years ago, I was thinking to myself, this whole world that I helped to invent, that digital marketer helped to invent, this whole world of digital marketing has had some negative elements to it. Mm-hmm. You know, people have email lists and they abuse it by putting too many emails out there. Mm-hmm. They abuse the social networking channel, you know, maybe make friends with you on Facebook and then try to sell you something, or connect with you on LinkedIn and try to sell you something. Or in our political world, it's so polarized now, and the social networks, especially Facebook, are optimizing for that polarization. Also with the social networks, it seems like unless you pay them, you don't get your information out there. So I'm really strongly convinced, and here's this pattern in the universe that I noticed, that on one hand, there's digital chaos and people are doubling down yet again on all of this content. I mean, of course, there's always going to be room for digital information, but I think it's gone too far in the direction of superficial online communication at a time that all of us are hungry for a true human connection. And at the same time, 5 years ago, what I realized is that I'm a massive fan of certain things. For example, live music. I've been to 790 live music. Ooh, 791. I went to a show 2 days ago. Oh, 791 wow. live music shows, including 75 Grateful Dead concerts. And I'm a huge, massive fan. And my daughter, Reka, who I co-wrote this book with, is a massive fan of Harry Potter. Not only has she read every Harry Potter book multiple times, seen every Harry Potter movie multiple times, been to Orlando to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter several times, went to London to go to the studio tour. She even wrote a 90,000-word alternative ending to the Harry Potter series where Draco Malfoy is a spy for the Order of the Phoenix. And she put that onto a fan fiction site, and it's been read, it's been downloaded thousands and thousands of times and commented on hundreds of times.
I have to read that. So, I'm the biggest
dork.
I actually...
What house are you in?
I'm a Gryffindor. I thought I was a Hufflepuff, but I'm a Gryffindor. Yeah, I used to write my own Harry Potter fan fiction.
Did you? Did you post it on the sites?
I did, and I read it live on stage. I used to write parodies.
Oh, wow. How
cool
is that?
And I read them out loud.
Wow. So which ones did you post to? Archive of Our Own or?
Fanfiction.net.
Yeah, fanfiction.net. That's so cool. So you get the Harry Potter thing. So my daughter and I were talking, like, we're such big geeks about the stuff we love. And we started to talk with hundreds and hundreds of people. And just like you, Jenna, everybody's got passion for something. Mm-hmm. So we decided to team up and write this book, Fanocracy, about how we become passionate for things. And at the same time, what's the prescription for organizations to tap into that passion? And I wrote it with Reiko because clearly we're different generations. She's my daughter. Clearly we're different genders. We're clearly into different things or have different fandoms. But also she's mixed race and she's a neuroscientist. She did a neuroscience degree at Columbia University and she's now in her final year of medical school. So we come at the problem and opportunity around fandom from very different perspectives. Mm. And I think that's a really important distinction, that it's not just a book from me, a middle-aged white guy.
One, my dad will definitely listen to this, and I think he'll be a little disappointed that I'm not a neuroscientist who wrote a book with him, but still love
Harry
Potter.
Look at what you're doing. You're doing cool stuff. I mean, that's the thing that we realized when we started to research and write this book, is that people who have passion, which you obviously do, end up doing cool and interesting things because you apply your passions to your work. And people who are passionate, who apply those passions to work, you know, you might say, what does Harry Potter have to do with digital marketing? Well, it has a ton, because you understand that passion and then you can make that come through in what you do. And that's a really, really important concept that a lot of organizations are missing, because they hire for people just based on what's on the resume or what schools you went to or what your last job was, as opposed to hiring someone like you who says, oh my God, I love Harry Potter so much. I'm doing like fan fiction around it. I'm going on stage and talking about it. Well, that's the person I want to hire. So your dad should be insanely proud of you.
Aww, he'll text me.
Dad, what's your dad's name?
Matt.
Matt, M-A-T-T? Mm-hmm. M-A-T. Matt, she's awesome. Aww. You gotta pay attention and listen to her.
I love that. Well, so okay, let's kind of meld these two ideas, the idea of the new rules, the publishing content, and then also creating raving fans. Because, you know, obviously with publishing content, like you said, a lot of that becomes soulless. It yes. becomes a machine. And yes. when brands are used to doing that, what is the first step when you really have to look at what you're doing and say, this is not the vibe I want to be creating?
Right. Well, interestingly, there are, we came up with 9 steps and you don't have to do all of them, but there's 9 steps. The more of them you do, the more you are likely to grow fans. And we looked at all kinds of industries, which was really fun. You know, people always said to us as we were doing our research, yeah, I mean, fandom, that's like for authors and celebrities, actors, movie stars, sports stars, but that has nothing to do with me. Well, in fact, it does. And one of my favorite examples of this is when I start my speeches now, I get on the stage. I don't even say thank you to the person who introduced me. I don't even say good morning to the audience. I say, who loves to buy auto insurance? And there's people, a few people like you laugh, and other people, it's just dead silence. And I say, one person I asked that question of said, insurance sucks. Nobody likes to buy insurance. And this was McKeel Haggerty. He's the CEO of an insurance company. Hmm. And so he recognized he had to do something completely different. He had to focus on developing fans. So what Haggerty does is they go on site at over 100 car shows a year. They do classic car insurance. They go on site classic car shows and educate people, have booths and do seminars. And then online, they have a fabulous YouTube channel with something like 1 million subscribers. Can you imagine an insurance company with 1 million subscribers? They do valuation reports. They have a magazine and they have an online driver's club. So they're doing a fabulous job. And what I love about Haggerty is they have done this, created a huge fan base. They're the largest classic car insurance company in the world. They're growing by double digits every year. They're going to do 200,000 new customers this year. But they've done it in a business that everyone claims to hate. Nobody likes to pay for their car insurance. And worst of all, they don't like to use the product because it means they crash their car. Yet this company has built fans. So we have a nine steps, and there's a couple of steps that are specifically have interesting approaches to digital communications. One of the ones I'm most interested, I think, is so interesting, is the idea of proximity, which is in the physical world, and then virtual proximity, which can be used in the digital world. And so this is how this concept works. We spoke with a number of different neuroscientists to learn about what's going on in our ancient brain when we're having communications with other human beings. What's going on is the closer we are physically to someone, the more powerful the shared emotion. So if we're close to someone physically and we like them and trust them, it's a very positive human emotions that are happening. If we are near someone and we don't trust them or we're worried about them or we're fearful of them, it's a very, very negative the closer they get to us. Mm. And there's several different zones of this sort of proximity. One is called the public space. That's further than 12 feet away. That's when someone is further than 12 feet away. You don't really track them. You know they're there, but you don't in our ancient brains, don't worry about them too much. In our DNA, we don't worry about them too much. Once they get within about 12 feet, we begin to pay very close attention to those people. That's why if you walk into a fairly crowded room, you immediately, you can't help it, your brain tracks all of the people that are within 12 feet. Hmm. Then if they get within 4 feet, that's called personal distance. Within 12 feet is social distance, but personal distance within 4 feet, that's like as close as you are when you're having a cocktail party discussion with somebody. Hmm. That's the most powerful. And what that means in an offline world is the more you can connect with customers, maybe create a meeting, do an event like you guys do, meet customers face to face, bring customers into close proximity with other customers. That's all real good stuff. This also explains, by the way, why you feel really great when you're at a digital marketer event and you're with like-minded people because you trust them and you have very strong emotional connections with those people, even if you've never met them, because they're like-minded people. They're in the same event. But if you get into a crowded elevator in a building or on a subway platform, you can feel really wiggy because that's your ancient brain kicking in trying to decide whether you need to fight or flight. So here's where the digital part comes in. There's another concept in neuroscience called mirror neurons. Mirror neurons are the part of our brain that fires when we see someone do something. So my brain will fire when I do something, but if you see me do something, your brain will fire as well. This is why when we watch a movie, we feel sad or happy. Nothing's happening to us to make us feel sad or happy, but we're seeing it and our mirror neurons kick in. So I'm now holding a lemon and a slice of lemon. You can actually see it because we're on video. So I'm going to take a little bite of this little lemon here. Ready? So what happens is my eyes close, my mouth puckers up. It's actually a little bit more difficult to talk into my microphone right now. My saliva glands are kicking into overdrive. My mouth is puckered a little bit. I mean, it's a pretty powerful thing biting into a lemon. And my brain is firing. My guess, however, Jenna, your brain might be firing just a little bit too.
Yeah, I actually anticipated the taste of sour in my mouth, actually.
Exactly. And even people listening in who didn't see us on video doing that might have even been feeling something in their mouth as well. That's from mirror neurons. Now, where this becomes really interesting in the digital world is that when you use video and photographs effectively, people's brains fire as if you are in close physical proximity with them. So I mentioned earlier, you've got these zones of influence. You've got further than 12 feet is called public space. From 4 feet to 12 feet is called social space. Inside of 4 feet is called personal space. That's where the most powerful human connections happen, within personal space. What that means virtually for us digital marketers is the more you can use video that's cropped as if you're in personal space within 4 feet of the camera, within 4 feet of the audience looking on the other side of the screen, the more powerful the human emotions are between you and the audience. A lot of people, though, when they create a YouTube video, for example, will be much further away from the camera than 4 feet. And they'll also often create, for example, on an interview program, create a situation where they're not looking at the camera. They're looking at another interviewer. So they do interviews where both people are facing each other, and then there's a camera. It's a typical 60-minute style. One camera over the shoulder of one person capturing the face of the other person and vice versa, but neither of those people looking directly at the camera and them being further away than 4 feet. That's not as effective for developing a human connection and not as effective for developing fans. What's way more effective in the use of video for developing fans is 4 feet away or closer, looking directly at the camera. So people who we see on a screen like that, we feel we know them. We feel that we personally know television stars and movie stars. We've never met them, but our brain is kicking in. Our mirror neurons are kicking in as if we know them. The same thing is true of photographs. So I highly recommend that digital marketers create photographs for their websites and social posts that are shot as if you're within 4 feet of somebody and you're looking at directly at the camera. This helps to explain the selfie phenomenon. So many people dismiss the selfie as frivolous. That's not a business thing. That's a kid's thing for Instagram. That's not business. It actually is fabulously powerful for business because, number one, a selfie is within 4 feet because that's how long our arms are, unless you happen to be an NBA basketball star or something and really have really long arms. And also, you're looking directly at the camera and you're in a situation where if someone takes a photograph like that, it's a very, very powerful thing because the audience feels as if they know you. So I've just riffed for an incredibly long time on a really simple question.
Oh, but I could listen to this forever.
But that concept comes from neuroscience. Mm-hmm. And it's simple when you hear it explained, but it's really, really, really powerful for developing fans. And that's just one of the 9 prescriptions that we put into the book, but it's fabulously powerful and not really well understood or used.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know that it works for a reason, or you know that there's something about it that has substance to it, but until you hear the why behind it, you're just like, oh, it's just the way it is. I have a question for you.
Sure.
So when you are creating content that might be trying to establish a relationship for those cold leads and stuff, is it better to start out further away at that social distance so that they can warm up to you? Or is it the personal that's better at the start?
It's a really, really good question. We didn't dig into that specific question, but just off the top of my head, I would think that some of the very top of the funnel sorts of contents probably ought to be just a little further than 4 feet away, because the whole concept of this idea of that strong emotional connection is that if you know somebody, it's a very positive, strong emotional connection. If you don't know someone, it can be a very negative, because your fight or flight instinct kicks in. So I think you're very perceptive in saying maybe at the top of the funnel, it should be a little bit further away. And then as you get to the middle of the funnel, it should possibly be a little bit closer. But I also think that there is lots of potential to begin using this concept way more than people are doing now, and specifically looking directly at the camera, which is something that isn't used that often mm-hmm. in our marketing.
Yeah, I think right now even I could probably stand to look more at, like, I'm looking at the video at you into your eyes, but if I looked into the camera, it would feel more like we were having a conversation.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And sometimes it's hard because mm-hmm. right now we're on the software we're using to record this and I'm looking at you. But if I look at the camera, it looks like I'm looking at you. But then if I look at you, it looks like I'm looking down. It's just kind of weird. So that's one of the prescriptions. I'm going to talk about one more.
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
And that is, give more than you have to. So this has also got roots in neuroscience. And the neuroscience aspect of it is that we humans are hardwired that when we receive a gift, we feel compelled to feel like we should give something back.
Mm-hmm.
So giving a gift with absolutely no expectation of anything in return is powerful. But when you give a gift with an expectation of something in return, it's not powerful at all and can actually even become negative. And here's the specifics for digital marketers. So many of us, especially in B2B, but it's true of all digital marketers, use the email sign-up form in front of our content. Right? We create a white paper or an ebook or some other piece of content and insist that you have to fill out a form in order to get that content. I mean, this has been used by digital marketers since the 1995, the beginning of the internet. And it's actually a holdover from the direct mail world, where the only way you could deliver a white paper was if you got a business reply card. So our research suggests that from a neuroscience perspective, from the idea of building fans, this is exactly what you don't want to do, because you don't want to create an adversarial relationship with someone the first time you're trying to get to know them. And by insisting on an email sign up, you're actually creating an adversarial relationship. You're creating a roadblock to developing that person as a fan over time, because their brain says, this is not a gift. This is not free. They are asking me something first before they even give me anything. And I can't get their stuff until I first sign up with their silly forms. So I would recommend that if you want to develop fans and have people share your content, that you should make your white paper, ebook, whatever content you're offering, completely and totally free, with no obligation whatsoever, no expectation of anything at all in return. And then that will then get people say, if your white paper is any good, they're going to go, wow, that's really valuable stuff. This is great. I should follow up with these people. And then maybe inside the white paper, you have a way for people to follow up, sign up for the email newsletter, you know, register for the webinar, whatever the secondary offer is inside of that initial offer. And we looked at a lot of different examples of this idea of giving away something without expectation of anything in return, offline as well. And one of my favorite examples of that is Duracell, the battery company. They have a program called Power Forward. And Power Forward gives away free batteries to people who are the victims of natural disasters, hurricanes, floods, fire, things like that. And I spoke with the vice president of marketing of Duracell, Ramon Valutini, and Ramon told me that this is like the most powerful thing that they do for their entire branding and building fans, way more important than anything else that Duracell does. And they, for example, were in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, they airlifted three trucks and 700,000 batteries. And then they went from town to town giving away free batteries to people who needed them for their flashlights or whatever it was. And this is huge for building fans. Now, this is interesting because at a time when batteries are most in demand, there is no time for humans that need batteries more than during a natural disaster when the power's out. And here is Duracell giving away their product when it's in most demand. Wow. And people remember that. They remember it, and then they remember Duracell, and they're fans of Duracell for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. I mean, that immediately put to mind, do you know Discount Tire Company?
I don't. I've heard of them, but I don't know much about them.
It's so weird because I don't care about cars, but I'm such a fan of Discount Tires, and it's because they will rotate and fill your tires with air for free. Nails and stuff. You just go in and they just do it right there. Nothing needed at all. And once you do that, it's like, man, I mean, that was so incredibly nice. And you are filled with like gratitude at how kind it was, even though it's a business play. It feels like a gift from someone. That is so true.
Yeah, it's powerful. Yeah, it's really, really powerful. And I'll give you one more thought specifically around digital marketing. And that is, we have a concept in the book we call Listen to Rehumanize. So it's basically making your communications way more humanizing. And this is a particular chapter my daughter Reiko wrote. And I mentioned at the top of the show that she's a medical school student. She's finishing up her final year now. And will be an emergency room doctor in mid-2020. Wow. And so she has been a really, really big proponent of the concept called narrative medicine. Narrative medicine came out of Columbia University when she was studying there, and she now is qualified to teach narrative medicine, which she does at Boston University. Narrative medicine is when you understand the entire patient and not just the patient's symptoms. And so what that means is that when somebody presents themselves as being ill, it's not just what are their vital signs and what are the symptoms of their problem. It's what is it about their story, their narrative? What kind of person are they? What are the things that are interesting to them? So you're basically understanding about that particular patient in a very human way. An aspect of this idea of humanizing is, how do you present yourself on your website? How do you present yourself to your existing and potential customers? And something that people can do instantly to make their digital marketing much more human is, number one, take a look at the actual words and phrases that they're using in their websites and other marketing, and eliminate what I call gobbledygook. You know what I mean by that. You go on somebody's site and it says something like this: we're the flexible, scalable solution for improving business process using cutting edge technology and mission critical applications. And it's like, what in the hell does that mean? It's just a bunch of gobbledygook, right? You have no idea. And there's so many, especially, I mean, that's sort of a B2B technology company sort of language, but all businesses have their jargon. So the challenge becomes, how do you eliminate that jargon from your site and speak like a human? And then the other aspect of this is stock photos. So organizations that use stock photography to represent people, to represent their customers or their employees, that's not being human. And it actively discourages people to become fans when they're looking at your website and what you're presenting are stock photos that you pulled out of a catalog to represent people, either your customers or your employees and or your partners or whoever. Don't do that. Use real people. And use real people in a way that develops that human relationship and is more likely to allow you to develop fandom in your business.
So when we've talked about things like video marketing at Digital Marketer, a big part of the pushback we get from customers is that they don't want to be on camera or they don't want to be a representative. They don't want to be the face of their brand, right? So how do you get around that? How do you get over that? What should you do?
Well, I would argue that the more an organization can put forward the passionate people that work there, the more likely they are to develop fans. And that doesn't mean that every single employee needs to be out there. That doesn't mean that every single person needs to share everything about their life. But I'm convinced after spending 5 years researching how and why people become fans and digging into the neuroscience behind it and looking at talking quite literally to over 1,000 people about what they're fans of and hundreds of companies that how they grow fans, that this is a really important element of it, is showing who you are as a person. What kind of business are you running? There's a fabulous example that we put in the book of a dentist. His name is Dr. John Murashi. And Dr. Murashi, when I first met him, was saying to me exactly what you just said to me. He said, you know, I'm just not sure about putting myself out there. I'm a dentist. Who cares about me? I don't want to use Instagram. I don't want to use video. And I had a chat with him. And I, you know, said, no, you don't have to, but just think about how powerful it could be if you did. And I said, what are the things that you love to do? What are your passions? And he said, I love to skateboard. I say, well, that's awesome.
That's cool.
Right? It's cool. So now in the last couple of years, he is crushing it with his Instagram. Last time I checked, he had 12,000 followers on Instagram. He's a dentist. Dr. John Murashi is a dentist with 12,000, maybe even be more, last time I checked was 12,000 followers on Instagram. And I said, you don't have to put yourself out more than you have to, but people would be interested to know who your family is. They'd be interested to know that you love to skateboard. They'd be interested to know a little bit about how you do your practice. So he's got four categories of things that he posts on Instagram. One is images of him skateboarding, and it's crazy cool. He's a really good skateboarder. There's images of his family, and I'm not suggesting everyone needs to show pictures of their family. And he's got young kids. And for some people, that may not be the right thing, but he does it. And then he posts images of his customers, the ones who are willing to do that with him, which is kind of neat because he's a dentist in the Los Angeles area. And he's actually got a few famous clients and some of them have posed with him, which is neat. And then he does the typical dentist before and after shots of teeth, which is what most, the only thing that most dentists do on Instagram. And he told me that he has 30% of his new patients come to him because of Instagram. And he believes it probably influences more than that, as many as half of his new patients, because he asks people, how did you find me? 30% say through Instagram and other social networks. And a lot of them, like 50% of people, say through referral. And he believes that many of those referrals were also influenced by his Instagram, because if somebody refers you to Dr. John Murashi and you do a Google search and then you see his Instagram, you're more likely to then follow up. So when they ask him, they say referral, but it actually includes. So it could be as many as half of his new clients. He said, David, there is no question at all that my growing fans through my Instagram has been transformational for my business. And this is somebody who told me initially he was worried about putting himself out there.
Yeah, and it's all just about being a human version of yourself and connecting with those other humans.
Exactly right. No, it's exactly right. And when you show that you've got passion, like when we started speaking half an hour ago, you told me about Harry Potter, and like that passion comes through. And to have the passion of you and your employees come through is really powerful. And we actually spoke with a number of CEOs about how they hire around this concept of passion. And quite a few of them said that it's the number one thing they look for in a new employee is what they're passionate about. One CEO, his name is Pete Cipollone. He's the CEO of a company called Instavisor. He told us, Pete is an Olympian. He has an Olympic gold medal. He was the coxswain in the men's eight rowing team in 2004 Olympics in Athens. He specifically hires either existing or former elite athletes, including Olympians and world champions. And he said, the reason is simple. I know from being an elite athlete myself that these people, these athletes, are incredibly passionate about their sport. They have to be to get to that level. And I know they're going to bring that passion to my company, and that's why I hire them. I had one other person tell me, she works for Owl Labs, Rebecca Corliss. Rebecca told me that during interviews, the most important question she asks, it comes near the end of the interview, but she asks, if you were in a room of 2,000 people, and of those 2,000 people, what could you confidently say you are the best at?
Cool.
And she said that the answer to that question is the most important answer of the entire interview, because that is the question that gets at what they're passionate about. Because she said that people who instantly have an answer to that, and then they have a huge smile on the face and they can't wait to talk about this thing that they love to do, that's the person she wants to hire into her company.
That's the best question I've ever heard.
It's really awesome.
I love that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So when does Fanocracy come out?
Fanocracy releases January 7th, 2020, and it's in all of the various editions. It's hardcover, it's ebook, and Reiko and I read the audiobook ourselves, which was
Saw on your Twitter the picture in the
great.
Studio.
It was great. And it's really exciting to have a book with one's daughter. It's brought us closer together. It's been a really fun project, still is a really fun project to do with her. And I love that it's not just my perspective, but it's our perspective.
I love that. Well, I have one final question, but before I get to it, where can people find out more about you and reach out?
So we've got a website at www.fanocracy.com where there's lots of information. You can download an excerpt. There's videos and other free content. No registration required after that riff of registration. And then on the socials, I am DM Scott, DMSCOTT. And so those are a couple of places that they can go.
Perfect. And we like to ask this of all our guests at the end. If you could go back in time and tell 25-year-old David anything at all, what would you tell him?
Wow, that's interesting. 25-year-old David would love to know that the things that he's passionate about at age 25 will be his life's work in his 50s.
I bet there's a lot of people who see that in their own.
Yeah.
See it mirrored.
It's really cool. I mean, you know, the fact that I love live music, I love to surf. At that point, Reiko wasn't born yet, but she would be soon after that. And all of those things that were really important to me have actually turned into my work, which is amazing. I've been happily unemployed for 17 years.
Yeah, hopefully more people can say the same about themselves. Well, thank you so much. This was just awesome. There's so many awesome insights on this one.
Thank you, Jen. I really appreciate it. It was really good fun.
Yeah. Well, to all of you listening out there, especially you right there, I hope you enjoyed. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Bye.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up, because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials, and 3 unique design themes for each holiday. The promo pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.